Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest edition, latest episode of Life on Planet Porky. You might hear a waver in my voice. That's because I've just spoken to Miss Jones, asked her about the sound quality of our respective voices, and she's described my voice as crisp as a nut. I mean, this is a family show, Miss Jones.
Huh? I didn't mean that kind of nut.
What are
come
you
on.
About? Why are you starting a podcast? Are you talking about my nuts? I mean, are you off your rocker?
No, not yet, but give it time.
See, she's giggling away again. I think you've been to something which alludes to a carol service at my favourite church, St Bride's. How did that go?
Yeah, I was there Sunday evening for a beautiful Advent carols and lessons service. It's just such a relief to have the church open and to be able to welcome people. We have to do it on an invitation basis, not exactly invitation, but you have to sign up. You have to go to Eventbrite and give your name and say that you're coming, because they have to know how many people will be in place so that they can operate the social distancing and all of that. Sure. But it's beautiful. We've got the massive Christmas tree up already. Yep. The choir were in fine voice. It was glorious. And it just felt the sense of community has not left us. You know, it's very difficult for people right now. But something I did want to mention, actually, on Saturday, the 12th of December at 6 p.m. GMT, the Royal School of Church Music is hosting a free carol service online, and anyone can sign up to this. They'll send out song sheets, everything that you need to take part. You can sing in this as well.
Yeah.
And all they have to do is go to the RSCM web shop, which is www.rscmshop.com.
Lovely.
And they'll be able to find details there if they fancy a nice big carol service.
Super. I'm not very good on technology. Does that mean that on your screen you could have up to 50 or 60 faces of people singing?
Yeah, you can, because we did this with our, you know, the scribblers, pluckers, thumpers and squawkers lunches. We had the Christmas one recently.
Yeah.
We had almost 40 people on the screen. It sort of flips over into two pages because you can't get them all on at once. But
lovely.
You can get a fair number, you know, and you get a real sense that you're all in the same room, everybody talking and joking and singing. We were all singing Blue Christmas at the end of it.
With
Rab Noakes accompanying us on guitar. Yeah. It was just lovely. So I think, you know, if you're missing your church services, if you're in the habit of going to a carol service every year, have a look at the RSCMs, because it might just be the thing.
Absolutely lovely. And remind us of that address at the end of this podcast, Leslie-Ann, because I'm sure it'll bring a lot of joy to a lot of people at this time of the year.
Sure.
You know, that's lovely. Talking about Christmas trees, by the way, have you got one?
Yeah, went out on Saturday morning and bought one. It's in the back garden at the moment. It's a massive big thing. We normally have about a 12-foot tree, but this year we've gone a little bit modest and we've gone for a 10-foot tree.
Where'd you put a 10-foot tree?
I've got very high ceilings, Victorian house.
Excellent. And well done.
We've got thousands, it feels like thousands, of decorations that we've collected all over the world over all the years. You know, I think this year, more than ever, we need our Christmas tree. It's a symbol of everlasting life because it's an evergreen, you know, and it represents optimism for the future. We need that now more than ever, don't we?
Everlasting love forever, everlasting. That's before your time, Miss Jones, but I think it's a 1960s Spencer Davis or something like that. You know,
it's not very Christmassy, though.
It's not very Christmassy. I got a message from my pal, Mr. Alan Brazil, last night, and he was standing in front of his Christmas tree, which is 24 feet tall and goes over two floors.
What kind of a house has he got? A barn or something?
It's a barn. And so as you come in, you come into the kitchen and there's a gallery. And then you go down from the gallery into the main lounge, which is beautiful. And it's got a huge hearth, you know, with a log fire and all that. And the tree goes over two floors. But the reason he's got it is that Al is an extraordinary man. He's got three daughters and three granddaughters and two nieces. And one of his daughters is about to deliver him his fourth granddaughter. And sadly, because his brother-in-law died 2 years ago, there's not another man in the family.
Oh, my goodness. So he needs to hire some in, doesn't he?
Well, he's got a son-in-law, of course, for the father. He's got two son-in-laws, the father of his four grandchildren. But actually, direct blood, Al's never had anything but girls. But the tree looks good.
The testosterone went missing in that family, didn't it?
It must have done. You're absolutely right, yeah. So there we are. Now, Leslie-Anne, we like to bring joy and light into everybody's lives. Of course we do, but we're talking now about a Brexit crisis. Does it worry you?
Yeah, it does, actually. It's not looking very good, is it, at the moment?
Well, that depends on what you want to happen. When you say it's not looking very good, I mean, you've got to define that. Do you mean it's not looking very good because you want a deal or the Europeans are being difficult?
It looks as though, the bottom line, we won't be able to still govern ourselves and no longer be subject to EU rules, which I don't fancy, frankly. The whole point of Brexit, in my view, was to become autonomous in every way.
Yes, I totally agree. Well, if we have no deal, doesn't that make us completely autonomous because we sever all links altogether and we go and try and trade with Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Japan.
And then we've still got the issues of the fishing rights. We've still got Irish problem.
No, I think then we just ban all European boats, including fishing boats. I think the French are being French, if you see what I mean.
Now, they're being absolutely French, and I've lost patience with them now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know a lot about France. I love France. I've told you before. There's nothing.
We love France, but we don't particularly like the French.
Well,
that's the problem.
I do actually. I like the individual French people, you know, Monsieur, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I like all that. And I certainly love French ladies in high heeled shoes. I've got a problem with
that.
Well,
English girls can get away with high heeled shoes as well.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a French lady talking French, you know, and smoking a Gaulois. What's it called? A Gaulois.
You know why French women are all so thin, don't you?
They take drugs?
No, they don't. It's all that shrugging, you know, mais oui, mais non. And every time they utter a syllable, the shoulders go up. They shrug and shrug and shrug. Yeah. So they get away with all that red wine, cheese, French bread. You know, they stuff themselves with all that kind of fattening food. Yeah. But they don't put on weight because they shrug a lot.
Makes them very attractive to me. I know you're not a great TV watcher, Miss Jones, but there's a fantastic series on, which I haven't got to the end of yet, called Emily in Paris. And it's a girl from Chicago who works in public relations, and she's transferred to France to the French, office. And I mean, the depiction of French life is just, you've got to watch it, honestly, Leslie-Anne, because you will love the way that they portray the French. You know, they never start work till 10 o'clock. They have 4-hour lunches. They shrug their shoulders when business deals collapse. It's just fantastic, honestly. You know, it really is.
My daughter, Mia, watches it. And I think from what she said about it, it's a bit girly for you, Mike. Are you sure you're not being a bit voyeuristic about this?
No, I'm not being voyeuristic. To me, I'd love to live in that society. Of course, it's not real France these days, because as we know, Paris has got terrible problems. You know, it has riots all the time. There's a riot only this weekend, I think, wasn't it? I can't remember.
I lived in Paris during the 80s.
Oh, right, okay.
When I was still a student, early 80s.
Yeah.
And it was the most fabulous place to live. I really thought I'd made it. You know, here I am, a student in Paris, wandering around over the bridges, visiting Notre Dame, which you can't even do anymore because it's half burnt down.
Exactly.
I just felt really French and really chic and I was kind of making my way in life. You know, the last few times I've visited Paris, it's felt very shabby and very dirty to me.
Do you know what? When friends of mine now go to New York, and that's very rarely now because of the travel situation, they come back and they say New York's lost it. Shabby, dirty, the infrastructure.
Yeah, everyone says the same.
Yeah. No, I can't. I understand.
Again, you know, that's somewhere I spent an awful lot of time in the late 80s, early 90s when I was working on Fleet Street. Yeah. I was back and forth across the pond, used to fly Concorde all the time. You know, that lifestyle just seems so far removed from how we live today, doesn't it?
No, I totally agree. Now, of course, today is a very, very special day. People accuse us sometimes of going overboard on the Beatles, and in particular John Lennon. But the reason, Miss Jones, we are talking about John Lennon today is because of...
Today is the 40th anniversary of John Lennon's murder.
Yeah. I know, and it still gets me. I swear to you, it still gets me. It's got me since the day I woke up and I got a phone call from the office. I was working for the Birmingham Mail at the time in their London office. And believe it or not, in those days, provincial papers were so strong, the Birmingham Mail had an office on Fleet Street, which is now the Woolwich Building Society, but we were actually in Fleet Street. And I got a call at about 4 o'clock in the morning because he was killed, I think, 3.50 a.m., was it, our time?
It was 3.50 London time, 10.50 New York time.
I probably got a call about an hour later, 4.50, and it was the overnight guy at the office said, you won't believe this, and told me. And from that, I remember coming home, I wrote all the words about John Lennon in the paper that day from scratch. You know what I mean? I loved John Lennon in those days. I love him now. And I just, you know, I wrote everything, you know, I could think of and all that kind of stuff. I remember coming home that night and I shared a house with a mate of mine who was a surveyor with British Rail. He looked after the property that British Rail lines go through and all that kind of stuff. And we're both fans. And we just sat there till 4 o'clock in the morning playing John Lennon songs.
And it's hard to do, isn't it? There are several songs that you could play to make yourself feel really sad about John Lennon.
Yeah.
I always think Number Nine Dream, it gets me going every time. Or if you want to play Mother or Julia or Woman.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much feeling and passion in his songs. And given the kind of childhood that John had, given away by his mum, to be brought up by his childless auntie Mimi and not having very much affection from her, John was somebody that everybody wanted something from, even when he was a little boy. And he wasn't really loved or shown affection. And it's always baffled me how he knew that love is what makes the world go round. It's all you need and you can't buy it. Money can't buy you love. How did he know those things when he didn't have those experiences in his own life?
One of my favourite Lennon songs is just that one, Love. Love is wanting to be loved. Love is only... It was so dramatic. Who played the piano on that? Was it Phil Spector?
Might have been Nicky Hopkins. I'm from memory. Right. I can't say for sure. But again, you know, it's he's captured that. When we tell somebody that we love them, we're not telling them. We are asking them. We are asking them to tell us that they love us. So it's a very needy.
Yeah, that's,
yes,
that's
I do. A, no, I've always believed that. It's a very needy stance, telling someone you love them. You shouldn't have to. Love is never having to say you're sorry, as we know from that brilliant old film Love Story. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Well, I don't. I never saw it, but I remember. Is it the 50th anniversary of that film? I saw a picture, I think, of Ryan O'Neill and who was the actress,
Ali McGraw. Beautiful, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
I had lunch with her in the Groucho Club a few years ago. Yeah.
Really?
And she'd retained her look. She'd cut her hair. Do you remember she had very long hair?
Yes.
As I did when I was young. I had hair down to the backs of my knees at one point.
Yeah.
And she had very short hair chopped up to her ears. And she was wearing very discreet diamond earrings and the minimum of makeup, and she just looked stunning. Yeah. And I thought that is the way to age, you know, gracefully and acknowledging your further years, not trying to pretend that you're a young thing. You just got to go with it, haven't you? And I think that was something John Lennon had as well. He was unashamed of the different stages of his life. He was in a good place when he died. He was very happy with Yoko.
Absolutely.
They had the little boy, Sean, who was 5. He was getting back to making music. He was planning to sail on the QE2 back to Liverpool and give the gig of all gigs.
I read that.
And then advance across the world and give a massive world tour, which would have been a huge success. And hopefully we would have gone.
We don't want to overdwell on it because we always talk about Lennon, but it is, of course, the 40th anniversary of his death. But just tell me this, Leslie-Ann, you had since we've done a podcast together, since we last done a podcast, you've had a spread in the Daily Mail and you wrote about Andy Peebles, the BBC Radio 1 DJ, interviewing Lennon. Why didn't Andy Peebles write that piece?
Interesting question. He was asked to. He didn't want to do it. He's done a deal with a US news channel, and any other publicity that he might do would compromise his contract with that channel. So he wasn't able to do that. So the fact that I'd interviewed him extensively, both for the book and for the last Lennon interview, which was a television documentary that we made, it made sense for me to do it.
Yeah, no, it made absolute sense. And the one line in it, which I think encompasses John Lennon, I think it's fair to say I never met him, and I don't think you did. You either got on with John Lennon or you didn't. And after they'd spent a day talking, they go to, is it Mr. Chow's, the Chinese restaurant?
Yes, fabulous Chinese restaurant in New York. Yeah.
And as they're walking in, John Lennon's got his arm around Andy Peebles' neck. He says, hey, Andy, guess what all the fucking people in here are saying? They're saying, hey, who the fuck is that with Andy Peebles from the BBC? I mean, it was self-deprecating, wasn't it?
Isn't it such a beautiful line? And you can hear him saying it. And Andy has a brilliant gift for mimicry.
Yeah.
And when we were talking about this, he captured John Lennon's voice perfectly. Right. And it sent shivers down my spine because I could so hear John saying it. And you can imagine that setting, can't you? It's just such a lovely, lovely payoff.
I can. And he was in a good mood. Talking about New York, there's a... There's five boroughs in New York. One of them is Brooklyn. And in Brooklyn, Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell is still in prison in the detention centre. And she's absolutely begging for freedom for Christmas. Do you think she should get it?
No, I don't. I think, I mean, of course, I do think that she must be presumed innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
But there does seem to be enough stacked against her to suggest substantial culpability, which is why she's in prison in the first place.
Well, I think what you're saying is there is a huge case to answer here, right?
I think so, yeah. And besides, who would she spend Christmas with? All her friends have deserted her.
Yes.
Her remaining family members don't seem to be stepping up to be supportive. Well, don't call Prince Andrew. Yeah. I don't think Her Majesty will be welcoming Ghislaine to Windsor Castle, do you?
No.
So I think you might as well stay in prison, love.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I couldn't bear to be imprisoned. If I was in prison, I'd commit suicide. I can't bear to be caged. You know, that's why I have such a passion for trying to get rid of zoos, because I know what it's like to be, you know, locked into somewhere and not being able to go out. The freedom that, you know, all humanity and all God's living creatures cry for. I mean, wherever she goes, I know she's got no friends, but she's got a house in New Hampshire we know about, and she'll have a, you know, she could rent a suite at the Dorchester for 3 weeks without it impinging on her fortune. Surely you're better off out of jail than in, aren't you?
I guess so, but this is not looking good for her, is it?
No, it's not. I totally agree. And to be honest, I have mixed feelings about it all. I think, again, she was a victim of her father, you know. I mean, we both know Maxwell as a newspaper proprietor and a bully and an aggressive, loutish individual. What effect could that have had on her, you know, as she grew up, I wonder?
A huge effect, and there is a suggestion, because she was his favourite child.
Yeah.
There is a suggestion that there may have been sexual abuse in her childhood.
I can't even envisage that. Honestly, I can't even envisage it. It's just too horrible to consider. Yeah. Let's move on. Now, I tried to go for Sunday dinner.
Since what do you mean you tried to go? You went outside the door dressed, ready for the occasion?
No. I finished a radio show on Sunday. And I thought, right, it's Sunday. I finished at 4 o'clock, got out the building about 5:30, something like that. I thought, it's Sunday. There's only two Sundays left till Christmas. I'm going to go for Sunday dinner somewhere. And the only place I could go, and I don't mean this critically, was Wetherspoons. So I ended up at Wetherspoons at Victoria Station in London. And I am a big fan of Wetherspoons. I think Tim Martin, the bloke who runs Wetherspoons, started it from nothing. He's now got 780 pubs. He was a barrister who just decided he didn't want to do law anymore and became a businessman very successfully. He runs good pubs. He literally imports cheap beer. What Tim Martin does is he buys beer when it's got 3 days left to go very, very cheaply and sells it very cheaply. You know what I mean? Anyway, to me, he brought pubs to the masses very cheaply, and I'm a big supporter of Wetherspoons. However, it relies on mass marketing product. And if you go into a Wetherspoons and the tables are literally 4 feet apart, which they were, it's a horrible experience. You sit there, you can order a drink, a couple of pints of beer, but you have to order a meal with it. And when your meal's gone, your drinks have gone, you're gone. It's a horrible experience. Do you know what it reminded me of? I went to Moscow and met Peter Hitchens before the Iron Curtain came down, OK? Peter Hitchens was our Moscow correspondent for the Daily Express. And we set up a bureau there. We knew it was coming to an end. We decided we'd get him first at the Moscow bureau. And Peter and I set up the bureau in Moscow. So we went to a restaurant in Moscow under communist rule, and it was exactly like Wetherspoons on Sunday. The tables are 6 feet apart in restaurants in Moscow because the whole communist principle is that the masses can't gather. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Oh, dear. What was the quality of the meal like?
The quality of the meal was fine. The quality of the meal is always very good at Wetherspoons, but it was such a soulless experience because there was nobody there, you know. I know I'm being selfish because I'm lucky compared to a lot of people who've had to suffer lockdown and all that, but my goodness me. The sooner, you know, I do in these situations, I say, and what I do is I say, okay, it's tough, but a year from today, it won't be like this. And I have to focus on a year from today so that next Christmas will be 10 times better than this Christmas. And so I'm not really worrying about this Christmas. I'm looking to that one in the future. Is that selfish of me to say?
No, I think a lot of people feel like that. But may I ask you, are you the sort of person when you go into a pub, do you chat to strangers
or never.
Do you keep yourself to yourself? So why does it make a difference to you if your table is distant from other people's?
Because A, it's atmospheric, but B, like you, because of the job we do, I'm a people watcher, aren't you? Aren't we all?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. But you can watch somebody across the room. They don't have to be 3 inches away from you.
Yeah, but there are not as many of them, if you see what I mean.
So do you eavesdrop on their conversations?
No, I don't eavesdrop. I observe the pattern of their relationship, if you see what I mean. I
can especially work, when they're all on their mobile phones.
Yes, or something like that. I can work out, I'm sure you can as well, within like 10 seconds, whether a man and woman sitting down at a table near me are lovers or married. You can work that out in like...
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah. The married ones are on their mobiles and not talking to each other. Yeah. The lovers are holding hands and gazing into each other's eyes. Very, very easy to read.
Yes, I know. It's not that clever. But I can work out other sort of things, you know, about, you know, the... I remember once, right, I know this is strange, but I was in a restaurant stroke pub once, and I got there and sat down at a table, and the family in the table that I was in my eye vision had got there before me, and I knew exactly what was going on because it was a young family with two young kids, okay? And this sounds like I'm a weirdo, but I'm not. So the woman was sitting there with a face like thunder, okay? She hadn't taken her coat off. The two kids were fidgeting as usual with their chips and all that kind of stuff, but the bloke was dressed immaculately in new gear, and it was white gear with white trainers and all that. And
I knew
exactly what was going on. He'd come into some money and he'd spent it all on himself because his wife and kids didn't have decent clothes, if you see what I mean. I mean, am I mad to have interpreted it that way?
It seems a little far-fetched. There must have been some... Maybe he just made an advert and come straight from the set or something.
No. They were a very average family, believe me. And he was a very average bloke, you could tell. There was nothing about him which impressed anybody. But I don't know how he got it. Maybe he put a bet on a horse or something like that and he'd won or something like that. But her face was full of fury and thunder. She was dressed in drab clothes. The kids' clothes were tatty, but he was immaculately dressed. And I could work out exactly what it was. He treated himself to something, but he hadn't bothered to include the family. I think that's one of the reasons, you know, why I never got married, Miss Jones. I always didn't think I would be up to it to provide, you know, for my wife and children and to make them feel good about themselves. I'm a bit
of
a...
You're a very generous man, Michael. Well, you know, I'm sure you would have had a successful marriage. But what I will say is that marriage is very hard.
Yeah.
And it exists on all kinds of levels.
Yeah.
And everyone says, oh, you've got to compromise. That's the secret of a successful marriage. Well, compromise itself is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And of course, you're not both compromising at the same time. You don't feel like it today.
Yeah.
And he might be expecting me to be, slathering over his every need. And today I'm too busy to be like that. So you're never on an even keel. And I think compromise is very overrated, because I think it only works if everybody's compromising together.
No, I totally agree with you there. And I, like you say, I've never been married, but I've found relationships very difficult because I'm a very selfish man. I've always put my job first all the time. And you're so completely right in what you've said. When I've spoken to relationship experts, they've said exactly what you say. You get up in the morning, one of you wants to compromise, but the other doesn't. And then you get up another morning and the other one wants to compromise, you don't. It's very, very rare you get up on a morning when you're both prepared to compromise. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and of course that sort of first flush of romance when you're first together, first get married, and it's all gorgeous, that doesn't last very long.
No.
And you've then got to find some companionship because the sex doesn't last very long either. So you've got to find some level of communicating with your partner if you want to stay with them and continue to have them as your life partner. And if they want you back... You know, but it's fraught with misery, the whole experience. And I'm not sure it's something I would do again.
And once again, of course, Miss Jones, we just get to the halfway point in our podcast and you have to lower the tone of things.
Not at all. I'm just being honest.
Even though this is a family podcast, and bring in the sexual angle again, Miss Jones. I mean,
What are we saying? Is there something wrong with sex?
No, nothing wrong with sex, Miss Jones.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life with Planet Porky. Thank you very much for joining us. I can now reveal something that happened in the break. Miss Jones nearly choked to death. And are you all right there, Miss Jones?
Yeah, I'm cool, yeah.
Yeah, what happened there then? Yeah?
There was a little frog.
Oh, right, okay, well, we won't get into that, you know, as we've gone on to the old...
Talking of French people.
Yes, exactly. Now, Miss Jones, you're going to be very proud of me because I can reveal to the world now my next production is going to be All I Want for Christmas Is You, right?
You're turning into Mariah Carey.
Well, I'm not turning into Mariah Carey. I do a bit of television now and again, as you know. And one of the shows I do is Jeremy Vine on 5, okay? And Jeremy's a lovely fella. He's involved in a battle, actually, with Jeremy Clarkson about bike lanes in Kensington. The two are at odds with each other. Jeremy is an absolutely avid cyclist. Anyway, more of that later. The point is that we have decided, or the producers have decided, to do a Christmas record, and it's going to be All's I Want for Christmas Is You, Maria Carey, and it's going to be on the basis of a Band-Aid thing, you know what I mean? Like, everybody does, you know, 10 seconds or 20 seconds or something like that. So
you're actually singing on this thing?
Well, you're singing dry, so you can if you want.
As opposed to wet?
As opposed to wet, absolutely. I prefer wet usually because it involves drinking. But the point is you can wear headphones and you can have the karaoke version of the music in your head and sing to that. However, I'm so astute, I didn't need that, so I just sung live to the camera. All's I want for Christmas is you. I don't need presents under my Christmas tree. All's I want for Christmas is you. See?
So you rewrote the lyrics as well?
Well, no, Miss Jones. You know, I don't carry lyrics around in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've noticed. Yeah.
Oh, you have noticed, have you? And I got it done professionally at my radio studios. Because my radio studios at Talk Radio are fully cameraed up because we, as you well know, because you were in my last show, actually. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It was really nice to be there.
That's right. You did it on Zoom and we put the programme out on YouTube and Twitter on camera and all that kind of stuff. So the studios are fully cameraed up. And the guys, the producers, did me a great favour. They put a backdrop of London under snow. You see what I mean? It was snowing.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah.
And I put on my elf hat. Imagine me in my elf hat, you know.
I can. I have to lie down, but I can imagine it, yeah.
Very nice. Thank you very much, yeah. And we just sung that song. And anyway, look, who knows what will come of it. However, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I normally do. And when I sent the clips, or when my producer sent the clips to the lady at Channel 5, She sent a note back saying, this is stupendous. So I expect to be a big hit on that show.
So you're going for the Christmas number one?
Well, I hope so. It'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah.
That would be fabulous, yeah.
It would. Talking about that, talking about number ones and all that kind of stuff, what's happened to Slade's record this year? And how many years have you been driven into insanity by Noddy Holder's Here We Are, Merry Christmas, Everyone, which I actually still love?
Well, I love it too. And Noddy Holder is a friend of mine. He's one of our esteemed scribblers who come to our lunches. Slade have actually got an album in the charts at the moment.
At the moment?
Steaming up the charts, yes.
Greatest Hits or something?
Yeah, it is. It's Hits with a Z on the end. And good for them. You know, look, they hang around.
I don't agree.
Every year, it's funny, we have the lunch. Obviously, we've had it virtually this year, but usually we have it in a pub, a music pub in West London. And whenever Noddy walks in at the Christmas lunch, it's, drinks are on you, Noddy, because the royalties roll in about this time of year for him. It's one of the great classics, isn't it? What would Christmas be without the 70s pop hits?
Without a shadow of a doubt. So here, and he's a black country boy from Dudley, I think. Or,
yes, he is. He's never lost his accent either.
Wolverhampton, yeah. So we're
he's got the most charming wife, by the way, Suzanne, who's just lovely.
Really, yeah. So here we are, Merry Christmas, everybody's having fun. And that was recorded, this is not a secret, I think everybody knows this, that was recorded in 82 degrees temperature in a studio in New York in June, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of Christmas songs are recorded in the summer. It's interesting. Yeah. You know the one they call the Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire?
Oh, yes, yes.
Jack Frost Nipping at Your Nose. That was...
Who is that? What's his name?
Everybody's recorded it. It's an old classic, but Mel Torme wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
And he and a co-songwriter were in Los Angeles in the middle of a heat wave.
Yeah.
And they were sitting around the pool, couldn't get cold. So they went into the piano and they made a list of all the Christmassy things they could think of to try and cool themselves down. That's the origin of that song, which is one of my favourites as well.
Really? Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. I hope we never lose Christmas and the Christmas weather and snow. I was so enamoured by some of the pictures in the paper over last weekend from the north of England. There's a chap walking his dog through the Kielder Forest, which is where I absolutely intend to retire to in Northumberland. I love snow. I love the north. I love pine trees. And I've got to get a bit more of that. I discovered Iceland, you know, about 15 years ago. I suddenly took a break in October because I was doing the breakfast show with Alan Brazil then. And Alan took the family to Spain for a week, you know. And I normally just work through and work with somebody else. But I thought, no, I think I'll do something as well. Where do I want to go? And I don't like the sun. So I went to Iceland and I discovered Iceland, Reykjavik. And it changed my life. You know, there was snow everywhere in October. The mountains were topped with snow. It was about -2 degrees. People walking around in woolly hats and scarves. I stayed at the Bjorn Hotel. That's Bjorn Jorg Hotel, okay? And I just loved it. As much as people like lying on sunbeds, I love walking through snow-laden streets.
Well, that's a joke, isn't it? One of the old classics.
What's that?
Reykjavik. No, it's just the way I'm standing.
Miss Jones, you really do.
It's a family show, right?
It is a family show indeed. Listen, talking about a family show, your dad, of course, who we mention often because he was a legendary sports correspondent, sports writer. He wrote for Shoot magazine, which I used to read as a kid, but of course he was also chief football writer for many newspapers, including the Daily Mirror. Was he a mate of Peter Alice, the golf correspondent?
Yeah, my dad was a big golf fan, and it's very sad to hear of Peter Alice's passing. A very charming, erudite man with a very quick wit, didn't he? Had a turn of phrase that always amazed.
Yeah.
And he was 89, and it is a good time to go. But yeah, a great loss to golf.
I mean, I remember Peter with such affection, right? The radio station I worked with for many years was Talk Sport. In fact, I invented Talk Sport along with a legendary tabloid editor who turned into a radio proprietor. And we started Talk Sport, and so we got in all these sort of top names. All right. So we got Peter Alice in to talk about golf. And Peter was such a lovely guy. So he must have been then, I suppose, going back 15 years, he must have been 74, okay? And I remember coming out of the building. We were in the street called Hatfields near Waterloo Station those days. And I finished for the day. It was about 2 o'clock, but I started at 3:30 in the morning. You know, I used to do the breakfast show and I was the program director, but I used to hand over to my number two at about 2 o'clock and I'd leave and go and have a drink or two and then go home. So I'm walking down the street. Peter's walking up the other way. And again, avuncular, smiling, you know what I mean? He was a tall guy and he had a lofty gait about him and he would, you know, throw his head back and start laughing at things and all that. And I said, Peter, how are you? He said, fine, Mike, fine. He said, I've been meaning to have a chat with you about things. I said, oh, okay. He said, should we do it now? And we went to the pub for 3 hours and Peter never went in and did his show. And I was his boss. I was his boss, right? And so I was absolutely culpable of taking one of my own presenters to the pub instead of doing his show. But you couldn't.
So did you fire yourself?
No, I should have done. I should have done. I should have fired myself and not Peter. But he was such engaging company. You know what I mean? He had a tale to tell about everything. He was just a lovely guy.
So what you should have done was have that chat on air. Just go in the studio, get some booze brought in. Totally and you should have just done the talk on air.
Yeah, no, I totally agree that, you know, if it happened again, of course it won't now. Poor old Peter has shuffled off this mortal coil. But if it happened again, I certainly would. Now, Ms. Jones, you know, you are a bit of a flake when it comes to the environment and all that kind of stuff. Yes, you are. Yes, yes, yes. And I've seen
grossly unfair.
Well, you know, people can make their own minds up on that. Anyway, I've seen a report about Britain's first all-electric forecourt opening for business this very day. The only hitch to this is that now, you move around at speed. You have to. You have so many things to do. When you go to Exeter to see your daughter or you're going there and to and fro and all that, when you pull into a service station, you would expect really to fill your tank and get going within maybe 7 minutes. Is that right?
Less. I try and do it very quickly indeed. You know, in and out, shake it all about, back on the road and off we go.
Jones, I don't know. You know, these things you say. Anyway, this all-electric one has got things like libraries and shopping centres and all that because it takes 40 minutes to charge your car.
Well, of course, how impatient are we going to be? You know, you're not going to sit there for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything worse. If I'm on a journey, especially a long one, I want to point the car and I want to get there with as few interruptions as possible.
Exactly.
I don't want to go to the library or go shopping.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I just can't understand how we're all being fooled into believing this is the new world, because ever since time began, we've tried to speed everything up, not slow it down, haven't we? Isn't that the whole idea?
Yeah, definitely, of course. And the other thing is that forecourts are very unhealthy places because it's not just going to be electric cars.
Yeah.
It's going to be fuel-driven cars as well.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot of exhaust hanging around in places like that.
Yes.
I don't particularly want to sit there inhaling it.
No, I totally agree. Now, listen, Ms. Jones, I've excelled myself here. As I'm talking to you, I managed to get onto my other computer when you mentioned Noddy Holder. And I found the top earning Christmas songs, right? And it says here, singer Noddy Holder and bassist Jimmy Lee are unlikely to get to number one again, but they finished comfortably top of the hit list for returns on a Christmas song. Happy Christmas, everybody, earns them $520,000 a year.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
What's your favourite Christmas song, by the way?
I think it's that. My favourite one, without a shadow of a doubt, and nobody will be surprised, and I hate to be repetitious, is War Is Over, If You Want It, John Lennon.
Okay, yeah, I love the Fairy Tale of New York.
Well,
the Pogues and Kirsty MacColl. It always makes me so sad because of the way Kirsty died.
Yeah.
You know, she was involved in an accident in South America a speedboat killed her.
Shocking.
And she managed to push her sons out of the way and they were saved.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely woman she was. I love that song. I also love Greg Lake, I Believe in Father Christmas. There's something very magical.
Someone told me it was Christmas or something like that.
And not quite that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. You see, you always pick me up on the lyrics, but you don't know them yourself, you see. So I think that's a bit harsh, really. Oh, I like, here's one. I wish it could be Christmas every day, Wizard. That's
a great song. Yeah. See, this is interesting because my kids are in their 20s, right? And they love all the old 70s classics that I grew up on because these songs were in the charts when we were kids.
Yes.
And it's interesting how they've become perennials and they've hung around. Sure. And nobody seems to have come up with anything since then that has bettered it.
No, I totally agree. Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues, another festive favourite which didn't reach number one, says in the report here. Fairy Tale of New York, featuring guest vocals from the late Kirsty MacColl, was number two in 1987, but regularly tops annual great Christmas songs. By the way, mine, Maria Carey, earns her...
Mariah Carey,
thank you, earns her $380,000 a year, which I think is a drop in the ocean to her wealth. But you're absolutely right. When Noddy Alder walks into your meeting in the first week of December, he's got $250,000 in his pocket from that song alone. That's amazing, isn't
it? Yeah, first rounds on him. But it is very interesting how it used to be such a thing to come out with the Christmas number one.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's not such a big thing these
days. It's not,
and I think that moment has passed, which is why those songs are still classics, aren't they?
No, I totally agree. It all stopped, didn't it? Once people stopped buying 45s and all that, it was frozen in time. Talking about Kirsty MacColl, I might even have an advantage over you here, Miss Jones, you being the rock chick writer extraordinaire, knows everybody in the rock business. But did I tell you that I used to do a show with Kirsty MacColl's husband, the legendary record producer
Steve Lillywhite.
Steve Lillywhite, I'm not sure if I've told this story before, have I? Steve Lillywhite lives in Thailand or somewhere like that, somewhere in the Far East, okay? And where's Bangkok? Oh, that's Thailand, isn't it? Yeah, that's
Thailand, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it is Thailand. It might be Vietnam or somewhere like that.
Well, he and Kirsty did sadly divorce. Well, so they weren't together at the end of her life.
Yeah, but he told me the amazing story. Not only could he not find anybody to sing Fairy Tale of New York and put Kirsty in just out of the blue and said, I've got somebody, it's my wife. But Steve Lillywhite was, of course, the original producer for U2, okay? So U2 had another producer when they were trying to put together the, what's the name of tree? Was it the Yak Yak tree or something?
The Joshua Tree, right?
So they had all these tracks, and a lot of them were very, very good. But they had a producer who was a half-bake. He was useless. And they went looking for another producer, and they found Steve Lillywhite. And Steve Lillywhite was married to Kirsty, as you quite rightly say. And Steve Lillywhite listened to it all, and he thought, God, what a mess. And so he let Kirsty listen to it all, and Kirsty dropped 16 tracks that should have been available for that LP and chose the ones that were on and did the running order for the first and second sides, and it became one of the biggest selling albums of all time. And Steve to this day says it was all down to Kirsty.
Amazing. Yeah. She was a lovely person.
Yeah.
You know, in Soho Square in London, there is a bench dedicated to her.
Right.
You can go and visit that bench and sit and have your sandwiches and cup of coffee and think about her, because she was a very Soho girl.
Yes.
And I really miss her. She was delightful.
And she's lovely in the video, isn't she? With Shane, what's his name? With no teeth. What's his name? Shane from the Pogues. Shane McGowan, no teeth and all that. And of course, the BBC, as usual, being their, you know, best at being buffoons, have decided to edit this song because it has things like, you know, that line which says, you're faggot, you're nothing.
You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap, lousy faggot.
That's
well,
right.
Of course, a faggot in the song is named after a meatball.
Yes.
It's not actually a rude word for a gay person.
Exactly.
But I think they've had to back down on that now.
I hope they have. A faggot is absolutely right. It's like a meatball in a...
Disgusting things, aren't they, faggots?
Yeah, they are. They're horrible. But it's the sort of thing you get in a steaming pot in a restaurant on Third Avenue in New York. You're absolutely right.
Isn't it a northern dish? I thought it was a northern English dish.
I think it is, but in America it means something else, and that was an American reference to it. I remember somebody telling me that, but I can't remember who it was.
See, that's a funny thing. You know, you have in America, you will have had them, English muffins. We don't have those here. There's nothing English about English muffins in America.
I totally agree. And it's like a crumpet, but it's not a crumpet, and it splits in two, and you toast it, and it's called the English muffin. You can't get them here. I totally agree. Now,
who are you calling crumpet? it.
Miss Jones, you know, family show. Now, Miss Jones, you've got to up your PR delivery with your great friend and my new friend, the Reverend Vicar at St. Bride's, right? Because I am looking at this morning's Daily Mail, and they've done Rejoice, It's a Real Life Vicars of Dibley. Nick is trying on the radiator, guinea pigs in the congregation, candles setting robes alight. And it's all based on the Vicar of Dibley, and they've gone out and found a load of female vicars. I would pledge that your friend at St. Bride's, and remind us please who she is the best of
the
all.
The Reverend Canon Dr. Alison Joyce.
She's wonderful, isn't she?
She really is. She has kept us going through this entire period, and she's very grounded, and she's very loving, and what would we do without her?
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I had an experience with her. She came on my show and explained to me the meaning of church services and why people can't go, and we got a fantastic response to that. Now, you may
have... So we're going to have a drink with her as soon as we can. You and I are going to go and have a beer with her.
Oh, you bet, in a typical Fleet Street pub, yeah. And by the way, I always knew the story about the spire at St. Bride's being the inspiration for wedding cakes, but she told the whole story right from day one. Which
it's a great story, isn't it?
Well, absolutely wonderful, yeah. Tell me this. Kate Moss is being eulogised at the moment because I think it's something like, is it 25 years since she got her first Vogue cover or something? She's had more, is it Vogue covers than anybody else in history?
Yeah, and she's back on the cover of Vogue this month.
Is that right?
Do you know what? She is Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah.
It's a bit like saying that Olivia Colman is Britain's answer to Meryl Streep. These women are getting away with it. They have done for the longest time.
Ooh, this sounds very bitter, Miss Jones.
No,
bitter.
It's not bitter at all. No, there's nothing special about Kate Moss. There are more beautiful models out there. I've always thought that.
Yeah.
She's a bit common. She's a bit Croydon. She's a bit, you know, foul-mouthed and not very nice to be around.
Yeah.
I just think this has all been blown out of all proportion, and that she is one day going to be found out.
How do they spot this so-called the face? Because Kate Moss, for me, is a pretty girl, and you see 100 of them on the streets of Croydon, South London, where she came from, every day. What I just don't understand how somebody like David Bailey or somebody like that, you know, class photographer and all that, suddenly picks out a face and says, this is the face.
Well, they just decide. They see a face that is a bit unusual at that time from everybody else's face, and they go, I want that one. And they sort of build it up. It's a bit like fashion editors. When people say, how do we know that maroon is the colour of the season? Well, it's because a bunch of fashion editors sat around 6 months ago and go, oh, we haven't had turquoise for a while. Yeah. Let's make turquoise the colour. So all the manufacturers have to steam in and start making everything turquoise. And then all the public out there go, I'm not going to be fashionable this year if I haven't got something turquoise, and that sort of cons us all into buying it. But it's just one person making a decision. Who cares? I happen to think that there are many, many prettier girls than Kate Moss in the world.
Well, that's really harsh, but I mean, I have to say I agree with you, but I do not resent her success, because I like...
No, we don't resent success. No, of course, no, don't resent her success. But I do think that she's getting away with it. And let's see the rise of some classier girls.
Yeah, well, you might say that. What I thought was the most interesting chapter of her life was when she was going out with Pete Doherty. Now, you may have interviewed Pete Doherty over the years, have you?
No, I managed to avoid that.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, good. He's a young whippersnapper.
What a waste of space.
A complete waste of space. He's not even a decent musician and all that. But all of a sudden, he becomes cool. This was explained to me by younger producers at my workstation in those days, TalkSport. They said, oh, no, he's really cool. And I said, what do you mean cool? I said, he's a drug-taking lout. He admits he doesn't wash for 3 or 4 days because he's a heroin addict, and heroin addicts don't wash. They only care about getting their next hit, you know. Oh, yeah, well, that's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's gross. I think they were just trying to perpetuate that myth of the rock star and the supermodel, you know, because there have been many famous pairings like Mick Jagger and Jerry Hall and so on.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think they were just going down that path gratuitously, but it didn't last.
No,
so,
I totally agree. And I haven't read a word about Pete Doherty for a very long time. So I think, you know, he had his moment in the sun. That was exacerbated by his relationship with Kate Moss. And then, like most of the musicians who come into our lives and go again, with the exception, of course, of the one
that we always talk about John Lennon. Their moment came, and I'm afraid when the sun came out, their iceberg melted, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Well, it's true. You know, the great thing, I know it's a tragedy that we lost John Lennon. We lost all the fabulous music that was to come that died with him.
Yeah.
But he's still 40. And he will be 40 years old forever. And there's something to be said for that. He is preserved in the prime of his life. We're all going to get old.
I think we'll leave it there. Miss Jones, thank you very much indeed. Great to have spoken to you again. Have a great week. And to our audience, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And we'll be back with you in a few days' time.
And just let me, before we go, remind our lovely listeners of the Royal School of Church Music's website. If they'd like to join in with a song sheet and all that's required, go to the RSCM web shop website.
Absolutely smashing. We'll leave it there, folks. Bye now. I love France. I've told you before. There's nothing.
We love France, but we don't particularly like the French.
Well,
That's the problem.
I do, actually. I like the individual French people, you know, monsieur, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I like all that. And I certainly love French ladies in high-heeled shoes. I haven't got a problem with that whatsoever.
English girls can get away with high-heeled shoes as well.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a French lady talking French, you know, I'm smoking a Gaulois. What's it called? A Gauloise.
You know why French women are all so thin, don't you?
They take drugs?
No, they don't. It's all that shrugging. You know, mais oui, mais non, mais oui, mais non. And every time they utter a syllable, the shoulders go up. They shrug and shrug and shrug. Yeah. So they get away with all that red wine, cheese, French bread. You know, they stuff themselves with all that kind of fattening food. Yeah. But they don't put on weight because they shrug a lot.
Makes them very attractive to me.
There are more beautiful models out there. I've always thought that. Yeah. She's a bit common. She's a bit Croydon. She's a bit, you know, foul-mouthed and not very nice to be around.
Yeah.
I just think this has all been blown out of all proportion and that she is one day going to be found out.
You all right there, Miss Jones?
Yeah, I'm cool, yeah.
Yeah? What happened there then? Yeah?
There was a little... A little frog.
Oh, right, okay, well, we won't get into that. You know, as people onto the old...
Talking of French people.
Yes, exactly.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.